Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. It's Saturday morning, and that means it's time for our WWE SmackDown audio review. Jake and I get together every Saturday to do this review of the WWE SmackDown show. We look at what's going on the show from start to bottom, try to analyze it a little bit more than we did in whatever reports were done the night before. But it's not the only audio that's produced here each week from either I or Jake. Jake and Will Pruitt get together every week to do what they call the .NET Countdown, that look at the best and the worst of professional wrestling each week. Very popular show here on the site for our members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw audio review on Monday nights, usually for the show. Will Pruitt comes along on Fridays with a breakdown of the TNA Impact show as well. Jason and I get together every Thursday for our flagship show. We call it .NET Weekly. We look at all the news of the week, off the break news that's not made its way to the site. Jason also does a Q&A audio. I'm around with interviews periodically. Lots of audio we produce here on the site for you each and every week, but the vast majority of it is exclusive to our members. So you got to be a .NET member. Sign up to become one today, folks. It is WrestleMania season. Things are getting hot and heavy. WWE is starting to come together and coalesce creatively, where there's always a lift in both TNA and Ring of Honor and the other indie groups we come to this time of year. This is the time to become a .NET member. And all you got to do is go to ProWrestling.net. Click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. Click there, and we will get you started for just $7.50 a month. We'll knock it down to $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, and you will get access to all of those audios. Plus, you'll get access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. A lot of bang for your buck here at ProWrestling.net when you become a .NET member. So head on over right now. Don't worry. We'll wait. Just put us on pause and go over there and take care of that and then come back and listen to us. It'll be all great. But let's talk about SmackDown, Jake. Bring Jake in here now. This was the SmackDown that aired on February the 8th, 2013. It was from Jacksonville, Florida, taped on the 5th. And, Jake, we're continuing the build to the Elimination Chamber. We know that there's only one chamber match, or at least as of right now, there's only one chamber match. And I expect that's how it'll stay. It's the winner of that is going to be the challenger for the World Heavyweight Championship. We've got three people involved in that. And then, of course, the World Heavyweight Championship match is Alberto Del Rio versus Big Show, which was kind of the only thing we had hyped coming into the show, was that Del Rio had been suspended from his attack, or for his attack on the Big Show on Monday's Raw, would not be allowed into the building. And what we got tonight was a lot of play on that. But before we even talk about what we got, I just want to talk about the structure of the show a minute, because I was very surprised. We had two very, very long talking segments. The opening segment, which is not really a surprise. Sometimes those can go long. I thought it was longer than it should have been. Not that it lost a lot of steam, but at one point, right before the end, I was thinking, wow, they have been talking a long, long time. And then the one that was more surprising was Mark Henry's return to SmackDown. He and Booker T again, and Booker T was involved in both of these extended talking segments. I just was really surprised at how, not the total amount of talking, but that these two segments went really, really long. Did you get that impression as well?
Yeah, I mean, they were long talking segments, and they had quite a few matches on the show, too. I think it was six or seven by the time it was all said and done, and none of them were longer than, I think, 6 or 7 minutes might have been the longest match. And, this particular format, I'm not such a fan of. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how, you know, they managed to have, I think, five matches of decent length on SmackDown and worked in a couple of talking segments, and I thought that pace, it was a better fit for me personally. This one, just the whole show at the times, the two talking segments dragged, and then the rest of the show felt like it was on fast forward at times. So it never really caught a comfortable pace for me, and I'm not sure how you felt about it, but that's just kind of what came across to me.
Yeah, I thought that the talking segments were at least started good. You know, I thought that both had good juice at the beginning, and then it just kind of dragged on. Booker T came out both with Big Show at the beginning and Mark Henry later, and just kind of argued with them and fought, and, you know, and they bickered back and forth, and Booker T was able to do all his catchphrases, and I get very frustrated when the general manager character really makes it all about them. And Booker T is guilty of that sometimes. And I don't necessarily blame him. I think it's just, you know, when you're a wrestler for so long, it has to make it about you. When you go into a supporting role, sometimes it's hard to strike the right balance there. But, I mean, he really, you know, it seemed like he was trying to get himself over more than the other guy over. I don't know. They both lost steam along the way. As far as the chamber itself, the three guys we've got in there now, and we got four now because of what happened at the end. We've got Rey Mysterio, Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry was added last night. Who was the other guy I'm missing?
Orton,
that's right, Randy Orton, who Henry beat to get in there. So those are the four of the six that we've got in there so far. And again, Mark Henry was added at the end of this show by defeating Randy Orton. That came from his talking segment with Booker T. What do you think about the chambers so far? Is that a good core of guys? And who do you think the other two should be?
Yeah, I mean, I like what they're doing thus far. You know, I think it's going to work pretty well. I mean, I'm not entirely certain who should fill out the other two spots. I mean, they had, Jack Swagger had a pretty, you know, he's kind of coming back strong. I mean, not that I absolutely agree with what they're doing with his character, but I think he'll probably end up being in there. Former world champions, as long as it's not the Great Khali, I think the other two could be just about anybody at this point. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree. It looks like Swagger. I'm not really sure who that last person is. I'm going to bet on Kane simply because Kane and Daniel Bryan have a storyline right now and that they're building to. It looks like with those two guys breaking up and Bryan being in, and then the interaction we saw on the show this night or this week was, kind of really points to that as well. So I think those are the next two. So just real quick before we start to break down the show, who's your early favorite to win? Let's say it is Swagger and Kane. That rounds out your six. Who's your early favorite to win the chamber?
You know what? I'm just going to pick Henry, just because I think he looks to be the strongest competitor that we've seen. I mean, the way he's exploded right back onto the scene, and even though his promo was a little long and Booker T kind of bloviated, I think he's probably the freshest person that they could put into the title picture. So I'm just going to pick Henry at this point.
Yeah, Mark Henry was the was the wild card. I didn't know if he would be back in time or if he was going to be interested in coming back. I know he was, telling a lot of people, if I come back, and that sort of thing. So before when I was predicting what was going to happen at WrestleMania, I always kind of left Henry out because I wasn't sure where his attitude was. But he's back now. There's no question about that. I think that this sets up he and Del Rio as well at WrestleMania. I think that's the match they want to do. And it could be a pretty good match. I also see it being another perfect chance for Dolph Ziggler to cash in. And just a real quick note on that, not to keep beating that horse, but because it would mean it's a chance of him cashing in at WrestleMania, do you think WWE, just totally separate of the storylines itself, just a question of WWE management and the creative thought processes, do you think WWE would be willing to let him cash in at WrestleMania?
I actually wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I know it would probably seem like the wrong place considering how much prestige they put on those WrestleMania title matches, but I mean, just to shake up the formula, I mean, I could see it happening. I mean, I wouldn't favor it and I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it, but I think it's definitely possible. And Ziggler's been holding onto that briefcase for an awfully long time now. I mean, you'd have to think, given what we know about how they structure WrestleMania matches, that it would be a good opportunity because they're probably going to get a good amount of time. And so, no matter who the winner is, they're probably going to get beat up. And yeah, I mean, it could work fairly well for Ziggler because it would be a huge moment for him. But I don't know if I necessarily bet quite a bit of money on it unless you're going to give me some fantastic odds.
Yeah, it's just we'll see how it plays out as it goes forward. Certainly, who wins the chamber will definitely change that conversation or dampen it down or maybe enhance it up more depending on what happens there. So, but we're just 1 week away from the Elimination Chamber, one more week of shows left. And we we'll see what happens next week. Let's talk about this show. Again, it was taped on the 5th of February in Jacksonville, Florida. We get the opening video, the narrated video that talks about what happened with Del Rio and Big Show on Monday. We get the giant tour bus that pulls up, the door opens, and some random guy steps out, looks around, and opens his arm like, see, everything's fine. Big Show pokes his head out, tentatively exits the bus, kind of yells at the guy about hitting potholes and everything else. He heads in through the back door. They did that gimmick twice, and the second time was when Del Rio did finally show up. But both, as soon as he walked in, they show him walking that long walk into the door. I thought, oh, God, here it is. But they managed to hold off till later, and it wasn't the traditional attack, as we'll talk about later on. We got the new. There was a new opening for the show. What do you think about the new opening of SmackDown?
You know, it's different. I mean, it's not the traditional rock music type thing WWE's doing. It was kind of a more pop, maybe techno type style, and I thought it worked. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was definitely a change of pace, which I guess isn't always a bad thing at all.
Yeah. The song was what it was. It wasn't my tea, but, you know, I'm not the only person out there, so I'm not going to complain about the song, but what I will just mock as much as humanly possible is, I don't know if you saw it or not, but I was so kind of stunned by the entrance that I was staring at the screen as it was playing, and in the middle of, you know, of all the different things they're cutting in with the different, it's all the same, you know, pictures of all the wrestlers and whatnot, but at one point they put up Smack by itself, and then a couple seconds later, Down by itself, and they put them in, like, crash bubbles like you used to get when people got punched in the old 60s Batman movie or television show, you know, and that's how they put it off. That's the lamest shit I've ever seen in my life. Like, the visual was bad. Like, I wasn't a fan of the song, but, that's not a big deal. And obviously, the opening is not that big of a deal at all, but that was my first impression, was really they used the Batman graphics to put up the name of the show? How lame is that? So, yeah, I wanted to kind of get that out there.
Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, yeah. Dude, if you get a chance, go back and watch just the first couple of seconds and watch how Smack comes up, and it's got that kind of exploding bubble around it. I thought, oh, God, all we need now is a wham pow. But anyway, Big Show makes his way to the ring. After that, he says that he was unacceptable. I thought he opened it from unacceptable. Shaking his head, completely unacceptable. He said he's sick of the double standards. He understands that people don't like him. That was fine. He asked if it was a crime to be unpopular, and then asked why it was okay for him to be forced to put his title up. So he asked why it was okay for Del Rio to attack him in his hotel room. He started arguing with a fan at ringside. Doing you suck, that's great, you suck chance, that's awesome. So said when you're popular, apparently you can do anything you want to. He said he doesn't get the fans, he's a bad person because he fights like a man. It doesn't make sense to man. He says Del Rio can attack him and get cheered. He said that prior to Del Rio attacking him like a Mexican Clint Eastwood, though, he did sign a contract, and he will be facing Del Rio for the World Heavyweight Championship at the Elimination Chamber. He said there's only one man who's responsible for this double standard. It's Booker T. And he just started running Booker T down. He said he's jealous of his fame, his wrestling ability, and he's mad that Show is still a force while Booker is pushing pencils backstage. Booker T's music at that point, he had an interrupted Show, comes out to the stage. He stayed on the stage. Said he didn't understand what Big Show was complaining about. No, I'm sorry, he came to the ring. It was stage later with Mark Henry. My apologies. He came to the ring with Big Show. He blew his last rematch for the championship and was still a bully for the way he treated Ricardo. Show started raising Kane about Booker T or one of his flunkies giving Del Rio his hotel room. He claimed that they were trying to destroy Del Rio's career because Booker T has to make it all about him. This is when Booker T really did make it all about him, and this is where this promo started dragging and going on too long. He said he was fair to everyone and that he had suspended Alberto Del Rio. Show said that he wanted to know if he said, again, I want to know, did you give Del Rio my hotel information? Booker said that anyone at the information or at the hotel could have given him that information, but it wasn't him, and Show didn't have to worry about him. He has to worry about his opponent tonight. Show was going on about how he wasn't dressed to wrestle, and again, how it wasn't fair. Booker is incompetent because he could have called or texted him to tell him that he had a match and he could have been ready. Booker just, you know, kind of blew it all off and said, your match tonight is with the big red monster, Kane. And if Kane wins, Kane gets into the chamber match. Joe just, you know, totally flipped out. He didn't have time to prepare. There's no way he could prepare for Kane. Booker said, I know you can dig that sucker, and got everybody to cheer for him and left. Like I said, it was good at the beginning. I thought Big Show was very good at the start of this, but then it just went on too long, and ironically, it's where Booker T actually did try to make it about him, it seemed, or at least it came across that way. Right after Big Show accused him of doing that, he actually did that, and that's where this seemed to kind of drag on. But I thought the first, I don't know, two-thirds of it was well done.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got the impression that they're maybe potentially building towards a Booker T and Big Show match at some point, just based on how frequently they've been, you know, having them kind of come to butt heads, and it usually, you know, revolves around Big Show kind of rubbing it in Booker's face that he can't go anymore and that he's not a wrestler, blah blah blah. So to me, at least maybe I could be way off, but it looks like they're trying to set up a match at some point between those two. But the rest of the promo was okay. I don't know. Are you a fan of this kind of another change in character for Big Show? I mean, he got into this feud with Del Rio, and you know he started out as you know, just kind of trying to recapture that monster type of character. But now he's just slipped back into being, you know, this kind of weird, paranoid prima donna type character. And I'm not sure I necessarily like that from Big Show.
Yeah, I appreciate the nuance, and I think it's necessary, quite frankly, because Mark Henry's back and is going to, you know, because he came back and just tossed people around, he's going to kind of occupy that monster heel space for a while. And they're both on the same show. I realize everybody's on every show, but you know, they were both featured prominently on SmackDown, both having, you know, big moments with Booker T. And we've thought, you know, Jason and I have talked about for some time the possibility of Booker T and Big Show at Mania as a possible match, simply because of the way they've been doing things, like you mentioned. But then he had kind of a Samson situation and interaction with Mark Henry later in the show, so I don't know exactly what's going on there as far as Booker T getting back in the ring with someone. It does look like they're building with Big Show, but now it looks like they're building with Henry, too. So maybe it ends up being a tag match, or maybe Henry's just a herring to throw us off, a red herring to throw us off. But, as far as Big Show changing his character, I don't know. I thought he played it well. I guess I'm more of the fan of the monster heel, but again, I understand the need for nuance now as Mark Henry comes back and starts the whole Hall of Pain stuff again. It's kind of hard to have both of those guys sitting there occupying the same sphere at the same time, the same, you know, archetypal character at the same time. So Big Show has to change somewhat. And this was, I like this till the end. The end with the payoff with Del Rio and the way Big Show acted there, that made me want to go insane. But here, I wasn't so down on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. They do need to create some separation between the characters that Show and Henry have. It just seemed like too much too soon. Maybe that was just there was no transition period. It was just 1 week. He was punching out Ricardo and you know swearing at Del Rio, and the next week he's complaining to to his bus operator about his steak. You know, it just didn't seem like there was enough of a buffer there. Maybe it's just me. I'm probably just picking nits or something.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And I, like I said, this in the ring, I think, was pretty good. Yeah, he was a little bit whiny and like the prima donna sort of thing, but it wasn't as bad here. Outside of the ring, all the stuff outside was just friggin' terrible as far as adjusting. And you're right, it was really fast, but I don't know. I liked the first part of this, and then it kind of fell apart. But I didn't like anything else with Big Show as far as outside the rest of the night, especially the ending, which we'll talk about. I wanted to, you know, usually we open the show with how it kind of ends, but I couldn't do it this week because I want to put up talking about it as much as possible to see if I can keep from cussing like a sailor on shore leave when we get there. But after we get all that, we went to commercial, and when we came back, our first match tonight, Kofi Kingston versus Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes defeated defeated Kofi Kingston in 3 minutes and 25 seconds. Pretty good match here. I mean, for a 3-minute match, the finish on this comes where, let's see, Kofi just hit a crossbody off of the top rope. Cody Rhodes used the ref as a distraction and dumped Kofi to the outside. When Kofi jumped back up on the apron, Rhodes quickly hit the disaster kick as Kofi was on the apron, and Kofi just collapsed. He rolled him back in the ring and hit him with Crossroads for the victory. What you asked in your report, quote, did Kofi fart during a team building exercise or something? Seriously, Jake, what the hell happened to Kofi Kingston?
I don't know. That's what I was asking the .NET universe to see if they could email me and let me know, because I really have no idea what the guy did, but he seems to be back in mid-card hell again, and I don't know what's going on. It seemed like he was getting somewhat of a build for a push, but now it seems like they've made different decisions and other people are taking that space for him. So I don't know. He seems like he goes through cycles like this where he kind of gets to that precipice where think he's going to get a push, and then he's just deflated again. It's a bummer, because I like Kofi, and he never really gets the push that I think he deserves, but whatever.
Yeah, they put the Intercontinental title on him, and then he has a really good feud with Wade Barrett. They moved the title a little too quickly with the understanding, and I say that as we thought the understanding was trying to get Kofi, back into the singles and give him a good lift and give him a good push. So I felt like they moved the title a little too early there, and then all of a sudden it was just over. And here you've got Cody, who has been the mustachioed comedy tag team guy that just broke up with his tag team, but then was still out jobbing the guys, and all of a sudden he's beating Kofi clean. It's so strange. What happened to Kofi Kingston? I don't know. It's so strange. That's just what it is. We try to come up with stuff, but it's nothing makes any sense why he gets these such odd stop and stalled pushes all the time, and when he's stalled, he just goes back to jobbing out the guys in the mid-card. I don't get it. I don't know if that's where he'll be for the rest of his life, and he's probably making good money at it, but... Oh, God, it's so rough to watch Kofi.
And it's not like Barrett really benefited much from that whole feud either. I mean, he kind of wound up back into a feud with Bo Dallas, so it's not like Barrett's on his way to the
moon. Is it time to do something with Kofi? I mean, I don't necessarily, maybe turning heel is, I mean, that's one of the options. I'm not necessarily advocating that, but, I mean, is it time to get away from the SOS Jamaican but not Jamaican guy? And, is that what he needs? Does he need an overhaul? Is that what the problem is?
I think so. I mean, and I'm sure there's a lot of younger WWE fans that would say, no, there's nothing wrong. They just don't take him seriously. But, I think it's time for a change. He's been doing the same act basically since he debuted on ECW, more or less, and that's probably, was that 2005 or 2006? So, yeah, I mean, it's probably time for a switch up in the character. It might be holding him back to some extent.
Video clips of Daniel Bryan costing Kane his match with Sheamus on Monday, and then Kane costing Daniel Bryan his match against Damian Sandow on Wednesday's main event were shown, and that led to Daniel Bryan and Kane backstage. Kane kind of wanted to throw him out. Bryan said, I'm not here to argue. I just want to apologize. The apology accepted, and I get out. Bryan went on to just talk very placidly to him and placating him and said, look, I'm worried about you, that you're mad at me about already being in the Elimination Chamber match. I'm sorry for costing you your match, and I forgive you for costing me my match, and here's what I need to do. I need to go down to the ring with you for your match tonight, because Big Show will be intimidated by someone who's already in the chamber, and your star will just rise because you're associated with someone who was in the chamber. Kane finally refused and said that he was 2 seconds away from annihilating Daniel Bryan, and said he would choke Big Show to hell, easy for me to say, later on, and stormed off. I your comment in your report that Bryan was the snippy wife and Kane is the angry husband, barely holding back his urge to commit an act of domestic violence, will probably get us some hate mail, but at the same time, it was pretty funny and kind of accurate. Kane was just, it's okay, or excuse me, Daniel Bryan just really came across as, it's okay, honey, just calm down, look, well, here's how we'll make things better, and that was the tone that he had, so nice analogy there.
Yeah, this is what it seemed like a television analogy to make. Plenty of other dramatic shows have had situations like that, and that's usually what it was. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was a bad segment. I mean, I think Brian did actually a very good job, you know, trying to subtly poke at Kane a little bit. And, you know, I think they are kind of working their way towards a big explosion of this team and probably a WrestleMania match. So if they keep moving at a pace like this where it's kind of subtle and well done, I think it could work. I mean, I wasn't all that excited about the possibility of them having a feud after they broke up, but hopefully it's just one match and then they can both move on.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think it is the one-match gimmicks, you know. They light them up. They give them at each other's throats in the Elimination Chamber, light it up during WrestleMania season, have the blow off at WrestleMania. Might even be the comedy match for WrestleMania. But yeah, that's what I expect. We get one match and then they move on. They don't need an extended feud by any stretch of the imagination. After commercial, we got something that you pointed out here. I just want to kind of bring this up. You actually wrote here, Matthew's plugging on the Raw clip this time for Brock Lesnar. And you mentioned this before we started recording, a lot of hype for video packages this week. You know, not a little bit of hype for matches, but the majority of the teaser hype coming out into commercial was for video packages.
Yeah, it just struck me as odd that they, you know, they did end up, you know, plugging the main event going into commercial once the main event had actually been made. So, you know, maybe they were they were trying to put over the video packages because they didn't have anything else at that point. But it seemed bizarre to me that they would literally, you know, going into commercial, hype that they were going to come back and show you a clip that most WWE fans have probably already seen on Monday. It just didn't seem like a very good hook to me to grab people through a commercial break.
Yeah, no doubt. Come back after the commercial break. We will show you crap you have already seen once. That's kind of the argument there. So, yeah, good point. But yeah, we did get another video package after the break, replay of Vince McMahon and the Brock Lesnar moment. JBL, when they came back from the commercial, JBL said it was the most horrific thing I've ever seen. A little too much there, John. Josh said that McMahon had hip replacement surgery and was resting comfortably at home. Again, for those who don't know, that he did, at the shoot, he did have that surgery, but it was not from Brock Lesnar. It wasn't a mistake or anything like that. We're kind of surprised, considering he had to have hip surgery, that he took that bump. But maybe it was surgery on the other hip, and that's why he took it on the one hip to protect the other. I don't know. But it was still kind of surprising, knowing that he had to have some sort of hip surgery, that he would take that bump. You know, they're tough and then they're stupid, and there is a line between the two. Then we got
you know
clip.
If it was a replacement? Was it an actual hip replacement? Was it actually a hip replacement? I didn't hear what the...
I don't know if it's legitimately a hip replacement. That's what they said, but he did have surgery on the hip. I don't know. I'll ask Jason, and we'll mention it next week if I remember, but I don't think even he knows. I think we do know he did have surgery. I just don't know that we know what surgery. But it was hip surgery, so yeah, it may have been a replacement, it may not. It's real simple. If he's back very, very quickly, it wasn't hip replacement surgery.
Right, you know, exactly.
He had some sort of other thing going on, but if he's back, you know, and I know he's got a date he's supposed to address everyone, but I have to look at that too. What it is, but I don't think it was replacement surgery based upon that timetable, because that would almost put him out to WrestleMania, and I just don't know that he's going to want to be down that long this time of year, you know.
Yeah, unless he was just going to come back in a wheelchair or do a promo backstage or something, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but I'll need to ask someone. I don't even think you can be in a wheelchair. I think after hip replacement surgery, like, you're down for a couple of days. They'll get you up moving pretty quick so that your body gets used to it, but I don't know. I'll find out for next week. I'll call some people from my old medical days, see if they can tell me. So I don't know that.
There
we'll
you
find
go.
Out. All right, so after that whole thing, we get another clip of Miz taking a beating from Brock Lesnar on Miz TV. He said that no one has ever stopped Brock Lesnar. As you point out, John Cena and several UFC competitors would disagree, and he doubts anyone ever will. This is obviously, I mean, it's pretty clear at this point we're getting back to Brock and Triple H at WrestleMania, and now we're going to get there through the old man getting beat up, I'm sure. And then we got the 9-minute-long Bruno Sammartino Hall of Fame video, and I say that not to knock the video or anything like that, but more to point out that even on SmackDown, I mean, they're going out of their way to make Bruno's induction a big deal and make you feel special, and that's absolutely 100% the right thing to do. Agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's an icon, and they point out numerous times that his accomplishments in the 1970s, being a champion for, I think it was something like 4,000 days, plus selling out the Garden. I think WWF at the time, did they run weekly shows at the Garden? And they said it was.
I think I saw an interview with him, and I think it sounds like it was monthly. They ran weekly shows, but it was once a month at the Garden.
Yeah, because I think it was Pat Patterson who said in the video that they're not. Maybe it was, I'm trying to think who it was. I'm not sure if it was Pat Patterson, but somebody said that he had sold out the Garden for like 6 or 7 straight years. And that, I mean, it's hard to to think of a guy who put WWF on the map more than Bruno did. So it's nice that they were able to work out a situation where he felt comfortable going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, they're really making it up. They showed this entire video. I thought, this is going to be the truncated version. That should have been done when we realized all the other stuff we were getting, for me to suspect that. But they showed the full version that they did from Monday, and really put Bruno over and showed the crowd clapping for him afterwards. And they're really making a big deal for him. After commercial, though, we got the not big deal, Great Khali defeating Titus O'Neil in 1 minute and 23 seconds. Not a whole lot to talk about here. Khali just, as Jason wrote one time, with a chop chop here, a chop chop there, a chop there, a chop everywhere, a chop chop, Khali wins. That's pretty much what happened, yeah?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot else to say.
Yeah. Obviously, this was a setup for what happened next. As soon as the match is over, Khali's celebrating. Mark Henry's music hits, and he came to the ring. Got a good reaction from the crowd when he stepped out. He came out. Titus had rolled to the edge of the ring closest to the ramp, selling the Punjabi plunge or the chop or whatever the hell it was that Khali beat him with. Henry grabs him, drags him out of the ring, slams him up against the wall. I thought that might be all we got from Henry as far as an altercation, but no, he climbed in the ring, and then he and Khali had a very, very awkward battle where Khali kind of had to wait for him a couple times. He had to wait for Khali a couple of times. It just was really bad, and I think more of a testament to Khali's inability to move well than anything else. But kudos to him for taking the World's Strongest Slam. That's how it ended, with Henry hitting the World's Strongest Slam on Khali. Impressive, display of strength there. If you go back and watch, you can see Khali helping him, putting his hand on Henry's knee and pushing himself up to help get him up there. But he got him up there, dropped him down. Seemed to protect him really well on the way down. Khali hit pretty flush all the way across the back and dispersed it. But just two things that stood out about this was how, again, when Khali's in there and has to actually show some ass, how tough it is for him, and at the same time, how that cringe when he took that bump. I realized he's not, it's not like, say, Hogan, who takes a back bump and you're like, oh my God. But this was, Khali just looked so hurt and uncomfortable all the time, and I have to admit that I cringed a little bit when he took that bump.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy who literally limps to the ring, I mean, it's tough to watch him take any abuse. I mean, you just have to think he's probably in constant pain, I mean, all the time. So, that probably didn't help at all. But at the same time, I mean, he's willing to do it, and he's getting paid, so I guess he can't, he can't feel too bad for him. But Henry looked good here, I thought. At least visually, it was a very impressive spectacle to see him pick up Khali and walk with him a few steps and drop him. So, if nothing else, I mean, as awkward and poor as the preceding moment was, where they, where they set up that move, it definitely looked impressive when they got there. And Henry jawing with people is always fun to listen to too. I think after he threw Titus O'Neil into the barricade, I think he yelled at him that sit down, boy, grown folks are fit to talk. And it reminded me of how much fun it was to listen to him yell at people during his previous run as champion. I hope they don't change much about that. I want to hear him talk during his matches.
Yeah, he is a legit scary guy when he's in those moods, and it's easy for him to be a heel. And like I said, I missed him yelling at Titus. I have to go back and see that. But yeah, that was something he was very good at before. He would really create that mood from his attacks and then the way he would just act around those. So, but he stayed in the ring through the commercial break. When we came back, we had a replay, and he had a mic, and he opened by simply saying, "The House of Pain is now open." He said that he was there bent on destruction, which is what his new shirt says. He said, are there any questions? He said, Kali, Titus, Rey, Mysterio, Sin Cara, they didn't have any questions. And then we had the clip from Monday of him beating up Rey and Sin Cara. He yelled that it was, he said, that's what I do. He said, all of it could have been avoided, but it was Booker T's fault because he assembled an elite group of world champions, but he forgot him. He screamed that a couple times. He forgot me. How do you forget the strongest man that ever lived? He said he needed an explanation because he couldn't wrap his head around it. He demanded Booker T walk out and answer him, because if not, he would walk to the back and destroy the entire SmackDown roster until he got his answer. We do get Booker T at this point, and this is where he stayed on the ramp, not with Big Show earlier. He said, you know, I'm happy you're back, Mark, but you can't come back and bum rush the scene because it wouldn't impress me and Teddy. He said that it wasn't like, he said there's room. It looks like there isn't room for you in the Elimination Chamber. He said because he didn't make room. Well, let me back it up. I got all screwed up there. Turned around, trying to read your report, remembered all at the same time. Henry said it looked like there wasn't room for him in the Elimination Chamber. Booker said there might be. He didn't make room, but he would if he knew what that meant. Booker said that certainly Mark Henry was a former world champion, but he needed to know if he could still go. He'd been out for 9 months. He had to make sure that he was still capable, and Henry laughed at that. He thought that was great. Booker said, that's fine. If you can beat someone who's already in the chamber, then I will put you in the chamber, and so you have to face Randy Orton later. And Mark Henry made the angry face, and that was that. I'm sorry for getting that all kind of turned around there at the end. But again, this was my biggest problem with this, is as fine as it was, it started to go on too long as Booker T was out there talking. And again, I felt like Booker T made it about him. He may be having a match with Big Show, but is he going to have one with Mark Henry as well?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I thought this segment might have been a little bit better than the opener. I don't think it dragged quite as much at the end. Henry, maybe it was Henry's facial expressions or how he was reacting to what Booker was saying, but the opening segment with Big Show just seemed to drag a little bit more for me. But maybe that has to do with just the fact that Henry is fresh, and that I was more interested to hear what he had to say than perhaps Big Show. But Booker, you know, it is kind of bizarre that he manages to interject himself in that way into just about every segment he's in. You know, he always tries to work in a catchphrase or spin a Rooney or something. But it at least set up the main event, and I was at this point I was actually looking forward to that match. I wanted to see what Henry could do as well after his hiatus.
After that, Big Show was backstage again with his bus operator. He chewed him down about the thermostat not being the right. He said, what do I want? 68, not 67, not 69. This is where I really started rolling my eyes for the things you mentioned earlier, how he was, transitioning to that prima donna sort of thing. This is where I started to dislike it. I thought in the ring earlier wasn't that bad, but this was bad. He complained about that. He said he wanted his steak Pittsburgh style, which I had never heard of before, but it turns out Big Show and I like our steaks the same way. Charlie on the outside, medium rare on the inside. So good to know in case he and I ever have lunch together. He continued to complain and berate the guy. He said, you know what, you overcooked it. You eat the steak. Fix me another one and fix it right, Pittsburgh style. And then he walked back into the arena again the way he'd come earlier, finishing putting his singlet on. But there was Del Rio sneaking around behind another bus, grinning and, obviously having bad things planned. After commercial, Kane was in the ring. Big Show made his entrance for our third match, Big Show defeating Kane in 6 minutes and 42 seconds. Almost a borderline squash match in a lot of ways for Big Show here. I mean, Kane did have the big comeback moment before taking the KO punch for the end, but a lot of Big Show offense on Kane here. I was kind of surprised Kane, bumped as much as he did for Show when they're still trying to keep Kane, relatively strong for what we presume is an upcoming feud with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, it was pretty strange because he really didn't get a whole lot of offense in the whole match. I mean, they had a couple of different punch and kick contests, but other than that, it was I think Kane hit a clothesline or two, clothesline off the top rope, but most of this was him walking into a spear or Big Show dominating, and then it was just kind of the knockout punch out of nowhere once Kane really started to get on a roll. So it was pretty much a borderline squash match, which does surprise me. I guess, you know, they'll probably just, from WWE's perspective, it's probably them just thinking they can flush anything down the memory hole, you know, next week if they want to. So maybe this won't be of much consequence, but it was strange to see Kane get beaten so quickly, especially being that he is currently holding one of the tag team titles, and we expect him to be in a WrestleMania feud. So, yeah, a little out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I just, you know, he didn't get destroyed, but I was kind of surprised at how little offense he actually got. But, of course, the person who did win, Big Show, standing there celebrating, and then you hear, "Hey, Big Show, hey, Big Show," and you look up, and there's Alberto Del Rio on the big screen. He said, you know, "I'm not in the building. I'm not allowed to be there. But I decided that what I needed to do was to make some friends." And so he reached out and put his arm around the bus driver. It was Big Show's bus driver. He said, "I made a friend." And he began to tell me everything, how you mistreated him, you know, how you treated him like I used to treat Ricardo. Okay, he didn't say that, but that's kind of the point. He said that once he knew that, he knew that everything was cool, and he said he made some changes to Big Show's bus. He thought Big Show would like him. He should come back out and see them. So Big Show ran from the ring, ran all the way to the back, stepped outside, and this is where the Mexican thing jumped the shark, because Jake, they had the friggin' bus up on cinder blocks with the back wheels off of it. We'll talk about the rest of it here in a second, but we have to stop there because the words, "Are you effing kidding me?" came out of my mouth totally on their own from seeing the bus up on cinder blocks, and Big Show started to melt down and almost cry at this point. This was too much, I thought.
Yeah, this was way over the top. I mean, it was... Like, I mean, the sheer amount of effort that would have been necessary to get a bus up on blocks would have been fantastic. So, I don't know. Did they ever do something this silly with Eddie Guerrero, like when he was doing his babyface?
I'm sure they did.
I don't recall a specific instance where it was this over the top, but this was just hit you over the head silly. I think I put in my comments after the match that it kind of played out like a Saturday morning cartoon based on Mexican stereotypes, and I think that's fairly accurate here. I mean, it was really you couldn't have gotten more stereotypical had you sat down and tried to craft something specifically that way. I mean, it was really over the top.
And then if that wasn't bad enough, like, to me, that was just, like I said, it was a stereotype of that just made me go, "Oh, come on." The Mexican bucket, the Mexican scarf, the Mexican bow tie, okay, that's fine. You're trying to make a Latino hero. I get it. I'm really going to be fine with it. But this was just over the top too much. I was really frustrated by this. Not as frustrated as Big Show's character was. He stomped and whined. How did that even happen? How do you do that? He leaned up against the bus, frustrated, whining, doing a "woe is me" moment when suddenly orange paint came just pouring down on him by the bucketful, covered him, the side of the bus, everything. He starts wailing like a child. Del Rio showed on top of the bus, grinning. I think it was the Mexican bucket he poured the orange paint out of. I didn't get a good look at the bucket. I was just kind of shocked at how things were going along. I also am not entirely sure why WWE loves to use orange paint to trash cars, because that's what Kofi used that time to mess up. I think it was Randy Orton's car. But they poured the orange paint down. Del Rio showed on top, laughing. Big Show's wailing, sitting there. You hear, "Hey, Big Show." He looks up, and there's Ricardo driving a tire truck. Del Rio sitting on top of it says, "Hey, if you need some tires, I know a guy. Give me a call. Adios." They drive off and leave Big Show standing there, literally sobbing like my 6-year-old daughter. This was, like I said, at the beginning of this, I wasn't so concerned about the switch. Here was where I was concerned about the switch and just disgusted by it. Why is the guy who was walking around knocking people out just 2 weeks ago standing in the back of the building covered in orange paint weeping like my 6-year-old? Why?
Yeah, I mean, if you had captured that whole segment on like a slightly higher speed camera and then played it back at normal speed and just put some Benny Hill music to it, you literally would have had a Benny Hill segment. I mean, that's literally what that was. It was like a terrible attempt at comedy that it just didn't play out well. And I don't know, you know, maybe there's a few people out there that would have chuckled at it, but I think, you know, it was just eye-rolling. I mean, there was nothing particularly redeeming about it. The Mexican stereotypes aside, I mean, watching Big Show sob like a girl in reaction to having paint poured on him, it's just like, who thought this would be entertaining? It's insulting to the audience's intelligence. And
didn't he basically give the Charlie Brown, like, he didn't say pick him, but didn't he say, why does this keep happening to me? Didn't he do the Charlie Brown gimmick?
I think JBL even later in the show made a Great Pumpkin reference, so maybe there was a Charlie Brown theme going on.
Yeah, it was for Brodus, yeah. I just, he's 7'1", 7'2", whatever the hell he is, 400 pounds. Why is that guy crying? It just sounds so bad.
It is bad, and there's really no other way to describe it. I mean, unless you were a young kid who thinks pranks like that are funny, just on the face of it. I mean, you'd have to work pretty hard to laugh at that stuff.
Yeah, I got a 12-year-old cousin that probably thought it was the greatest thing he's ever seen, but he's 12.
Right, that's what I mean.
And I realize there's some target audience there, but God, come on, man, we can do a little bit better than that, can't we? After commercial, it didn't get a whole lot better. We got Jack Swagger at his entrance. They had a cut-in promo that had him talking about being, you know, real Americans don't take handouts or wait for something to be given to them. They go out and they take what they want. Before we even get to the match, I said this in audio on Thursday, and I want to get your thoughts on this here. I don't like Swagger's look. I think he looks bad. I think his hair, along with that Don Johnson, you know, 5 o'clock shadow beard thing that he's got going, I think he looks ridiculous. It's a turn off type of look where you look at him and go, he looks retarded. And it's standing out to me big time. Is it just me, or do you think he looks as bad as I do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a particular fan of his look. I guess it's not like an eyesore to me, like it bothers me, but, you know, I'm just not a fan of the whole kind of package. The promo that they had him cut, kind of picture in picture, where, you know, he was doing kind of the, you know, real Americans don't take handouts, blah, 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 generic Republican heel kind of thing. I mean, along with, you know, the stale moveset and the look that doesn't really do much for me, I'm just not really feeling Jack Swagger's comeback or his return. I think they're doing too much of the same, you know, that he was doing before he left, and, you know, the stuff they have changed really hasn't been for the positive. So, I don't know. I'm just not, I'm not a Swagger fan at the moment, despite actually being very high on his talent in the ring.
Yeah, I don't like what they're doing here. I don't mind the America gimmick so much, though. He does desperately need to get away from that ankle lock. It doesn't look like they're going to do that. He's already renamed it the Patriot Act, which I know you and I could scream about that all day. He needs to get away from being Kurt Angle Jr. still. That was the knock before, and it doesn't look like they're interested in doing anything but that on his return, and that's going to keep the guy down. He's never going to get over by being Kurt Angle's, you know, baby cousin or whatever. But he did go over in the match, fourth match of the night, Jack Swagger defeating Justin Gabriel at 3 minutes and 13 seconds. Again, a basic squash match here for Swagger over Gabriel. Beats him with the ankle lock, which, again, he's calling the Patriot Act at this point. And that was that. I mean, he's very impressive at this point as far as wins. They're going to put him in the chamber. But he needs a – I mean, if he's going to keep that gimmick, I think he's going to be better at it as that silly frat boy that he was before. I don't think he can sell this as a serious act. I don't think his look is right. I think, you know, and the lisp just reminds us of who he was. And I'm not picking on the guy for having a lisp. I'm just saying he has one. We have to deal with that reality. And as long as he continues in this America gimmick, and you know, has that lisp and looks the same and does the same basic moves, all we're going to remember is the Philly Jack Swagger from before, which I actually enjoy, but this is not the good version of it. Does that make sense? It's almost like they bastardized the original, and this is not going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like he's a comedy character that kind of switched gears, and now he's taking himself a little too seriously. But
yeah.
I guess we'll have to see how it plays out. I mean, I do, you know, really like what Jack Swagger does in the ring. I just haven't been really a fan of his character, but hopefully he'll change my mind eventually.
We got more video packages at that point. The WWE Reading Superstar campaign. They do this all year round, but they really, really kick it into high gear for WrestleMania season. I'm sure we'll see, you know, as part of their week long events in the New York, New Jersey market, they will be up there in at least one elementary school and probably several, doing the reading challenges and whatnot. And it's, you know, look, it's good stuff for WWE. It's good PR for them, and anytime you can get kids reading more, I'm going to champion that, even if I'm not necessarily a big fan of everything that you do. So they certainly need to be commended for their efforts in getting kids to read. And after commercial, we got the Fandango promo video. Looks like Johnny Curtis is back on track to make his debut as the Fandango character. It's gotten decent reviews from our live correspondents who have seen him at house shows. He does seem to be able to draw pretty good heat, but I don't know. I don't think this is necessarily going to work on TV. It's pretty strange, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is bizarre, and I did see him live, and, you know, he's kind of changed up the look a bit since I last saw him. But, yeah, I mean, if it's still the same character, he's going to have a lot of work to do to get that over on television. And, you know, I guess, you know, if you can get past the look and actually see the talent there, I actually really enjoyed the match that he and Jamie Noble had at our house show. But, you know, I'm just not into the character. I don't think a dancer is going to come across on television like they expect it to. I think it would probably be a great character if you were just doing house shows and he could interact with audiences, but I'm not sure if that'll get through the camera the same way it would to a live audience.
Looks like we might know soon. It looks like his debut is imminent, so keep your eye out for Fandango. And this was almost, what I loved about this was this seemed to be like, let's see if we can cram all the worst gimmicks in WWE into one in-between commercial segment in one time. We come back from commercial, we get Fandango. Immediately they go to the ring, and who's there? Friggin' 3MB, Tensai's already in the ring as well. And so we get our fifth match of the night, Tensai defeating Drew McIntyre by DQ at 119 when 3MB jumps in the ring to stop the fight. Who comes running out again but Brodus Clay to make the save, and then there's the Funkasaurus and the Funkadactyls doing the dance with Tensai. Tensai tries to fight away and not do it for a while. JBL, who I hope in my heart of hearts he was shooting straight on the headset. He was being 100% honest. He started talking about it. He goes, don't do it, Tensai. You're a two-time New Japan Cup winner. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then when he finally started dancing, he was just like, that's terrible. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. And I just hope to God JBL would shoot straight there, because I will say this. There's something about the two fat guys dancing that makes me giggle a little bit, but I'm not proud of myself for doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's amusing, but, I mean, it's such a poor use of both of them, you know, as far as, what we've seen from them in the past and in other places, in the case of Tensai. But, yeah, I mean, it's bizarre that, you know, they actually thought that what they did in Las Vegas meant that they were onto something. I mean, it's just like, holy crap, like, who wants to see this repeated every week? But it seems like that's what we're going to get, I guess. It's a shame.
Well, you know, I guess if you're trying to figure out what to do with these guys, last week at Vegas they did get Tensai. Well, I guess it went last week, maybe it was on Main Event this week. I can't remember. I watch so much wrestling it starts to run together. But at some point, Brodus had the entire crowd chanting for Tensai. I don't think that's ever happened before. So there's at least for a minute it's working. I don't know, but this was so over the top. And of course, 3MB, anytime they're around, I just want to throw up in my lap because it's the worst gimmick in wrestling right now. I honestly believe that, even more so than the Funkadactyls. But at any rate, or the fucking Dactyls and the Funkasaurus. But at any rate, we got all that out of our system when we came back from commercial. Six match of the night, Antonio Cesaro beating Sin Cara in 2 minutes and 11 seconds. The finish on this came when Cara jumped off the top rope and Cesaro hit his European uppercut out of the air to blast him and got a good pop from the crowd and followed with the neutralizer for the pinfall. But, Jake, the story of this match was Sin Cara's just incredibly innovative, and Cesaro had to help him pull it off. When I watched the replay, I watched enough of how much he had to do. That crazy sunset flip where he jumped on him and then kind of hopped up and went over, grabbed him, and then it was almost like into a powerbomb sunset flip. Just a really cool move.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the type of stuff that, you know, Sin Cara was really known for in Mexico, and I think there's been quite a learning curve trying to find, you know, for him to adapt to the WWE style and finding, you know, wrestlers that he can work with that can sell these types of moves, and obviously Cesaro is one of them because he did a beautiful job selling all of Sin Cara's offense throughout the match. So yeah, I mean, I know there was there's been a general kind of attitude, at least on our forums and through responses that I've got through email, that Sin Cara has been a huge disappointment. But I really don't think we've seen anywhere near the best of what we can see from him, and this is just kind of a taste of it.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't lived up to the hype. I mean, that's a legitimate statement about him. He has not lived up to the hype, but he does stink. You know, the kid has great talent, and that's why they signed him, and that's why he had so much hype. I just, like you said, I don't know if it's the WWE style or what it's been that's been the problem, but or maybe it's a combination thing. But we had a little bit of flash here where we saw something, and this is 2 weeks in a row now, maybe, that I've seen Cesaro win a match where he did something. The last was, God, I can't remember who it was he was wrestling, but he did a fall-away slam that the guy hit the padding outside, the kind of railing outside, but it was really kind of awkward looking. It reminded me a lot of some of the stuff that, you know, Claudio Castagnoli used to do in Ring of Honor. It very much looked like that sort of thing, and something very similar here. So this is twice in a row now where we've seen something a little more, I don't want to say risky, because that's the wrong term, but just, I don't know, it's making him stand out a little bit as the guy who's able to pull off some things that you don't see a lot of on WWE, and that's a good sphere to occupy there, because there's a lot of stuff we don't see on WWE that we see in other places, and I think the WWE could reasonably incorporate into their style without hurting guys, but we'll see how it goes. It was it's a 2 minute match, and it's there's not a lot of great action in there, but there are certainly moments. The uppercut out of the air is pretty impressive, and again, that sunset flip, go find it just to watch that. It's only about 3 seconds long, but just very smooth, very fluid, and I bought it completely. More than anything else, it wasn't just one of those moves where you're like, wow, how athletic. It looked like, you know, it looked like a move that Sin Cara could actually pull off that would have made, you know, that actually caused Cesaro to take that bump. So, well done moment there. Definitely check that out. Afterwards, Randy Orton's backstage. Matt Stryker asks him about Henry, you know, having to face Mark Henry later. Orton said, Henry's been on the shelf for 9 months. And it was a good plan. He goes, then he comes back and he just beats people up, throws them around, demands to be in matches. It's a good plan. That was a pretty good line from Orton there. He said that, but the problem was that he ran into to Orton tonight, and Orton was a roadblock, and if Henry wasn't careful, he was going to put himself back on the shelf. Very, very critical of Randy Orton's promos all the time on SmackDown because they were so often painted by numbers. I thought this one, I mean, it, you know, it just hit the house on fire, but I thought it was pretty good, and I really did like his line about good plan.
Yeah, I mean, it was still a very Randy Orton promo, but this is one of the better ones. I mean, he actually did manage to have some clever lines in there, and you know, he did put over the match and Henry in the process. So it was a good Orton promo, even though I still wish he would kind of shed the more monotone attitude that he takes to a lot of his promos.
We went to commercial. When we came back, we had another interview, Matt Stryker interviewing The Miz. Miz said he's been in the ring with some of the baddest superstars, but he saw something different in Brock Lesnar, something lethal is how he called it. He was continuing to put over Brock when Cesaro walked up laughing at him and said, only in America can a guy stick his nose in other people's business, get beat up for it and then come back and complain about it later. Miz said he was right. He should stop sticking his nose where it doesn't belong. Maybe he should start sticking it where it does, like this. And he hit Cesaro. They brawled around on the floor, and then the refs came and pulled them apart. And they were still brawling when they left the segment, went back out front. I thought Miz might be, you know, Brock Lesnar fodder for a while, and maybe it still turns out that way, but it looks like he's still locked in a fight with Cesaro at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. I mean, I like what they've managed to do thus far with Cesaro and Miz, despite that unfortunate botch that could have ruined Miz's knee. But, you know, they've managed to craft a decent story here. And, you know, Cesaro needs credible opponents, and the Miz, you know, would definitely benefit from, you know, having solid technical matches with somebody like Cesaro. So I like where they're going with it. I was surprised that they didn't have the, you know, Miz stick with Lesnar for a little while longer, but, you know, I'm not going to bitch about a U.S. title feud. I actually like both of these guys.
From there, we went to the Raw Rebound video, which, you know, so many times we talk about this, that the WWE video team is so incredibly talented, and they constantly put out great stuff, but then there's sometimes they just catch a hold of stuff, and it's just awesome. This is one of those. I mean, it's not, you know, top of the tier, and there's, you know, oh, it's breathless, but this is really, really, really good. It really sets things up. It makes the Shield look like total badasses. It makes Cena and Sheamus and Ryback coming out and attacking them a big deal. The music is cute just right with this, with the silent moment right before the big fight starts and then slamming into it. I just was real impressed with this video. I think it's very well done.
Yeah, I have no complaints at all. I mean, it was very well done. I'm looking forward to where they're going with it. I think the Elimination Chamber is shaping up to be a lot of fun despite the short build.
Yeah, it's often a pay-per-view that's not thought out well, other than the chamber matches, and that doesn't seem to be the case this time. They did show the footage of what happened when Raw went off the air, where Cena actually made the match for the Elimination Chamber. But yeah, see this video. If you haven't had a chance, see this video. The way they set everything up and put heat on that match is really well done. And then after commercial, that was our seventh and final match of the night. Mark Henry defeating Randy Orton in 4 minutes and 48 seconds. Very good back and forth match. Really fun 5-minute match here from these guys. Both guys got in good offense. Orton started his comeback, though. Of course, Henry was ended up on top at first. He ends up beating down Orton. Orton makes his big comeback, hits that DDT from the second rope. Started to go for the RKO, but Henry just shoves him away. I wasn't a big fan of the finishing sequence because it seemed so rushed and fast. But Orton goes for the RKO. Henry just shoves him away. Orton runs to the corner, turns around, and maybe if the timing had been better, it wouldn't have been so bad, but he had to wait a second for Henry to get there, and I thought, you know, he should have put an elbow up or something. But Henry hits the stinger splash clothesline thing in the corner and then pulls Orton out and hits the World's Strongest Slam for the win to earn his way into the Elimination Chamber. Good match to close the show. Henry looks strong. Orton doesn't look terrible in defeat because it was, you know, he was on his roll. He just about was there, but, you know, Henry was able to pull away at the last second. So I like what they did here, but the ending sequence was timed just off just enough that it, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you go, oh, yeah, that's right, it's fake.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, I thought overall the match was pretty solid. It wasn't anywhere near an all-time classic or anything. But, you know, for a five-minute match on SmackDown that gave Henry a big win and put him in the Elimination Chamber, I'm not going to complain about it. I think there were a couple of spots that, you know, he might have shown some rust, but I think that's probably to be expected. And, you know, I think Orton looked sharp throughout, and Henry got his win. So it was a good close to the show, and I think the chamber match is going to be a lot better with Henry in it than it would have been without him. So I'm not going to do too much complaining here.
And then did your SmackDown show from Jacksonville, Florida that aired on the 8th of February. Jake and I will be back next week. It is the go-home show for SmackDown, and we will have all the final hype as we head into next Sunday's Elimination Chamber. Jason Powell and I will have coverage of that show. Well, Jason will have coverage of that show. That is my oldest daughter's birthday. I am still trying to figure out what our plans are that day. I may or may not be around. But there will certainly be coverage that night, as well as tag team audio, Jason, and maybe I, or it might be somebody else. Again, we're still trying to work out all the details. I have to find out. Yeah, it is. It's her 16th birthday, so I have to listen to what my wife says this time. So I don't have a vote in this one, apparently. But somebody will be around with Jason Powell to do audio as well that night. But that one will be exclusive to our members. So if you want to hear that, then now is the time to sign up to be a .NET member. We are just weeks away from WrestleMania. There will be all kinds of news that will break. Our members will get that news first. Our members will have access to all the audio that tells everything that we know, and our members will be able to follow along with both WrestleMania and the Elimination Chamber on the ad-free version of the site, talk about it with other members in the forum, and blog about it in the blog section. If that sounds like something you want to do, then head right now to ProWrestling.net, click on that .NET member sign-up link, and become a .NET member today. Sign up to be a forum member. After you do that, it's a separate sign-up process. You can use your same information, but it is a secondary sign-up. And once you do that, say hello. Let us know that you signed up to be a member after listening to Jake and I here on the All Access Podcast, and we will tell you how much we appreciate it. We do appreciate you guys listening each and every week. We will be back next week again for SmackDown. Until then, everyone have a fantastic weekend, and take care.